Hi, it's Dave. Have you ever wondered if Tesla could use their AI experience to expand beyond autonomous driving? What other areas or products could Tesla get into using AI? In this video, I'm going to be discussing such questions with James Dauma, a software engineer and a passionate machine learning expert. The following is an excerpt from my first conversation with James Dauma that happened over a week ago. What happened was we had this great 2-hour conversation, but after I ended the conversation, I found out that the whole first hour wasn't recorded because of lack of storage on my computer. So anyways, I have the second hour of that first conversation with James Dauma. I'm going to link to that file in the video description. What follows is actually a highlight from that conversation where we focus on the possibilities that Tesla can move from AI in the car and move on to different product categories. I also share some thoughts on the future of AI and the crisis of truth that's coming. Do you think in 5 years, Tesla will be able to remove the steering wheel from a car? Like, let's say in the Robotaxi network, or do you think that we're going to have that steering wheel for much longer, you know, for, let's say, this whole decade or
so? I think the steering wheel is going to come out. It's, you know, whether it's the Model 2 or some future Model 3, the steering wheels will come out of cars. I really think, you know, there's a point not too far in the future where we're going to look back in horror that we ever let people drive cars. My dad grew up working on a farm, right? And he has these horrifying stories of industrial farm accidents, right? Mm. And today it's inconceivable that we would let people work those kinds of jobs that were that dangerous, right? And so you definitely get the sense when you hear him tell these stories about, you know, that was a different world back then.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a decade after self-driving cars come on the scene, we're going to be in that kind of space. Like, oh my God, how could you let your child in a, you know, driving a car driven by a human being? What irresponsible person you are.
I'm curious with Tesla, and as they develop their whole neural nets and, you know, machine learning experiences, like, what other possibilities do you think exist for Tesla to leverage, you know, that experience into new types of products or services or features? Like, you know, because once they get down, let's say, autonomous driving, you know, and it's like, because it's just, it looks like it's just a matter of time, you know, as they continue to push forward and they're doing the right things, they have all the pieces in place. And it just seems like, hey, just follow the path and you'll solve the problem, right? But with that, like, what's next for Tesla? Like, they built up all this, you know, capacity, this ability, this learning, you know, and where do they apply that next? You know, obviously, they're going to continue their autonomous driving efforts and continue to get better and better over time. But is there anything else that you think Tesla can, you know, move those resources to create more value?
Yeah, that's I saw that question come up on the user comments on, or the user questions on Twitter. And my immediate reaction was that it prompted me to have an interesting thought, which actually doesn't answer the question, but that is that, Tesla has developed a production process for building really big neural networks that, like, do really important things in the real world. I mean, Carpathy's data engine, right? And he's been basically out there telling people how to do it, right? Mm. You know, I mean, you could get a start on executing against this formula. So I'm really interested in robotics as, and robotics is another application of similar kinds of things. The biggest problem in robotics, you know, say you wanted to build, you know, a humanoid robot, a human scale robot that can do what people can do. That would be a really useful device to have. It can do all kinds of useful things in the real world because it's a substitute for a human being in some pretty straightforward jobs. It drops into all these different sort of functions in the real world today, delivering boxes or, you know, mowing the yard or whatever the deal is. You know, you've got this one general purpose robot, much like cars. The biggest problem they have is the problem of perception. And perception for a robot is a lot more complicated than perception for a car is, because the environment is much less constrained, right? But one of the things I look at when I look at Carpathy's data engine and this thing is, he's showing us the way to build that perception engine for general purpose robotics, or drones or delivery drones or whatnot. I mean, that you know, if you were Amazon and whatever you've been doing for the last couple of years for your delivery drone for making an environment, like Carpathy has shown you a model that you can cut and paste, expand, you know, as a way to like build a big neural network that's extremely effective in, you know, very economically to solve a particular big problem. That to me is a really interesting contribution that they're making right now, is essentially they're showing the world how to go about solving this problem of levering this new technology now, right now, not 10 years from now, after a lot of other people have some pieces of the puzzle. Like they're solving the whole problem of creating an industrial process that builds a really big neural network to solve hard problems in the real world. So when you ask the question, well, like what could Tesla do with that next? That's actually a lot harder than like, what could the world do with that next? There's all kinds of interesting possibilities.
I mean, that's fascinating because I actually have never connected the dots until right now, since right when you just mentioned that, I'm like, robotics, you know, it's like, you know, you'd think that
bigger than cars.
You'd think that like transportation is like, you know, typically what we know it as, like cars or trucks or something, but you know, transportation, and it's not just transportation, sustainable energy too, but a robot moving from point A to B or doing something on your behalf from point A to B or, you know, whatever, that is in a way, it takes energy, you know, it's a movement. And Tesla has expertise in, you know, energy storage, and they don't have the robotics per se right now, but they're building more manufacturing expertise, you know, year after year. But this whole, the whole perception problem, the whole, you know, passive visual, the movement, you know, using, you know, neural nets and AI to move around and to successfully do that, that could be transferred to robots. And so, you know, Tesla can transfer their battery storage, they can transfer their, you know, neural nets or AI experience with movement.
Electric motor design.
Electric motor design, all that.
It's like electric motor design. That's the single biggest kind of industrial problem. And in like, if you want to make I did this, I have a collaborator and we basically work out business models that AI could be applied to. We've been doing this for a couple of years as kind of thought experiments to explore this stuff. And the humanoid robot one, so I did a design study trying to figure out. So say you wanted to make, for $10,000, you want to build a robot and it's approximately the size and weight of a human being. It can operate for like 8 hours on a charge or whatever, you know, what are the core technologies we don't have to do that today? Right. And I looked at the batteries and the structural materials and all that stuff is actually pretty easy. I was actually surprised. I didn't think the batteries would be good enough. Batteries are more than good enough to be able to do that stuff right now. But one thing, if you want to make a cheap, really reliable, robot, you need really simple joint motors, right? And it turns out that they're you know, you can work forward from the physics principles to see what the shape is, and nobody's building those motors today, right? I mean, they're totally buildable, but nobody's building those motors, right? So that's a piece of tech that somebody could go and sort out. But the thing that's really missing is the perceptual system that lets a robot have a really good understanding of the environment so that it can interact with it, right? Much like cars. In the long run, planning will be neural networks too. And eventually all the control systems will also be neural networks. But relative to perception, those problems are relatively less important. Like, you know, it's more important to get the perception down right now. And robots are kind of in similar space right now. So somebody's going to build that.
Exactly.
And you know, building that, a $10,000 robot that can basically do the physical tasks that human beings do, man, that'd be a good market. Right? There are a lot of things you could sell that into.
Yeah, definitely.
Will Tesla do it?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know if they have the bandwidth to go after that on top of all the other stuff that they're picking out. But you know, if I was going to pick a company off the top of my head, that I would say, if they went after it, they could do it. Yeah, it would probably be Tesla right now.
Yeah, I mean, and even drones too. You know, it's like leveraging a lot of the stuff that Tesla is already working on. And then the whole comment by Elon saying that, hey, Tesla's long-term competitive advantage is going to be manufacturing. And so, I don't know. I mean, how do you take that? I mean, it seems a little bit counterintuitive because, you know, it seems like manufacturing is part of, you know, the whole Tesla experience and their competitive advantage. But do you see that happening? And how do you see that happening? Can is manufacturing really
Yeah,
going to
sure.
be like the long-term advantage or not?
So Tesla is an interesting entity because they're like being mission driven as opposed to being profit driven, right? That changes the dynamic in a really interesting way. If you're profit driven, right, the thing that makes the most sense is to, in a kind of winner take all world that we like, if you can make a commodity for 10% less than any of the competition, you can sell as much as you can make, right? Because, so the market favors people who do a little bit better than the competition, enough better to have a distinct and then stop, right? And save further, stay ahead of the competition, but you don't need to spend a lot of money and take a lot of risk running way ahead of the competition, right? And you see a lot of companies do this, right? It's the standard model that we do. But when you're mission driven, right, your goal isn't to be 10% better than it's to go much farther down that line. And Tesla's like this super rare example of somebody who's gotten to scale, who's mission driven, right? So they didn't like, they built a Model S back in 2012 and it was better than any other electric car. And it wasn't like, hey, we got a good margin on this car, let's stay there. I mean, they got the three and it's a lot better, but the three keeps getting better. I mean, it's head and shoulders better than anything else that's out there. And it's getting better and better and better. They have this skateboard design, which is the it's it should be like, I don't know how other manufacturers feel about it, but it should be the envy of the manufacturing world. And they're, at battery world, they're like, we're getting rid of that skateboard. We're going to go to this structural battery thing, which is a lot better. So they're taking a lot of risk. They're making a huge investment in all these and in revamping the way that they do this stuff to basically, and I don't think this is because they're trying to open more water between them and the competition, right? It's because they have this other goal farther down the road that they want to get to. And when you think about them that way relative to kind of the classic way of doing business, you get a whole different set of answers for where they're going to end up and what they're going to do.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I definitely agree. Like, I've been wrapping my brain around that whole concept of how unique kind of Tesla, but also Elon are with their whole mission driven focus. It's not that common, to have that strong of a mission
No.
focused.
And
And
at scale, right? I mean,
exactly.
you see 10-man companies do this, or 50-man, man, 50-person companies do this kind of thing. But
And the scale of the mission being like kind of global and, existential, the whole existence of humanity on the brink type of, level
It's a
problems.
phenomenon,
It's like
right? It's
when you
not something that's happened like outside of war
exactly.
in like modern history, right?
Yeah, like when you take a step back, and if you take a step back to see with a wide lens, 100-year, 200-year, whatever, it's like this stuff is like, and not just one company. Like, one company would be pretty amazing, to have that type of ambition and scale, and also pace of innovation and products. But for someone to be doing it across multiple companies, it's just, yeah, I don't think people completely grasp what's happening, because it's happening right now. It's like you kind of have to wait, in 20, 30 years down the
It's
road,
going to be interesting to see what the history books say about
Exactly.
this era.
A lot of times, like especially in times where things are changing fast, like a lot of times people just don't take a step back and say, okay, let's really think about this, and let's really just try to figure things out, or at least to the best of our ability. And so I think it's actually a very valuable thing when people can actually, say, hey, wait a minute. Like, I had this other thought like the other day with robotics, and we can probably talk, hopefully we can talk about this later, but it's like, at what point does AI, like, I guess, merge with robotics to the point where humans like can't tell the difference between a human and a robot, right? Because like with AI, you have the whole Turing test where it's like, okay, like you have maybe text and it moves to audio and then video eventually, where at a certain point, computers and AI are so good in their ability to communicate that humans, can't tell a difference between, if this is a computer or a human. And so it seems like we're reaching that point right now, and it's moving into not just audio, but now into video with these like deep fakes and kind of this whole thing where it's like, hey, is that video really a person, or is that, AI generated video or something? And so there's a lot of issues at hand. It's like, hey, there's, in a way, there's a crisis of truth that could be coming, where it's like, how do you know what's real? Like, in terms of, is that a real person or is that a created, you know, something? Meaning our perception of what is real versus just, you know, animated or created off the fly to perhaps even manipulate us or something. Like, that ability starts to get in crisis. And I think for perhaps the first time in history, where technology has gotten to the point where it's giving us a struggle, a new challenge that our previous generations and descendants have not had to deal with, you know, at this level. And if you map out or project the future down the road and just take the steps, you know, and that's the other thing. It's like, you know, I think sometimes it's like people don't want to think about the future because it's kind of overwhelming, or we don't know, it's so ambiguous, et cetera. But if you do kind of take the future and say, hey, yeah, the pace of technology is improving. You've got these massive revolutions with not just the computer, with the internet, and now with, you know, artificial intelligence, and they're all converging. You could see a path where you have these humanoids or these robots, but, you know, they get so good in interacting with people that it's like you can't tell the difference with their voice or how they sound. But eventually, I could see a point where down the road, who knows what that point is, whether it's 10 years down the road or 30 or 40 years down the road, where, you know, the humanoid actually, whether it's people or AI, have figured out how to make that humanoid indistinguishable, like, with physical features, to the point where it's like, you don't know if that's a real human or not, you know? And that type of world where, you know, you could possibly make more humanoids than humans, right, in the world, because you don't have kind of this scarcity of human reproduction going on, you know? You just, you know, who knows? Who knows if general
are smaller than atoms?
Exactly. Yeah. If general AI is able to, I don't know, let's say make billions and billions of humanoids or trillions, and humans can't even tell the difference. But then it comes to the point where at a certain point, it's like the power and the intelligence and the joint kind of ability of humans to even be a 0.0001% of the ability and capacity of general AI or the AIs out there. It's just so ridiculous. I mean, you can't compare anymore, you know? And so this future, I mean, what's your take? I mean, obviously you've studied this area for a long time. Like, are you optimistic about the future that somehow we're going to be able to navigate all this, let's say 30, 40 years down the road? Or do you see some big risks and, like, I don't know, are you optimist in terms of that we can, you know, overcome these challenges, or do you have some concerns as well?
I don't know. You know, we're either going to overcome them or we're not. Right. That's a Elon's he's had, you know, we must get past the great filter or whatever thing, you know, about the Fermi paradox, mm-hmm. the whole thing. Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be interesting. So what I've got to say, I don't think there's any formula. I think it's either going to work out and we're going to make it, or it's not going to work out and we're not going to make it. And I don't, I mean, if you, the Fermi paradox says we're not going to make it, right? The Fermi paradox says you look at the universe, nobody else made it. Why would we make it, right? The great filter.
Actually, can you explain this great filter from your perspective?
What Elon so Musk the Fermi paradox is, Enrico Fermi was listening. The anecdote is Enrico Fermi was over listening some people at Princeton or something like that. He was listening to some neighboring table at lunch discuss you know, the existence of aliens and whether they existed or not, something like that. And his observation was, well, where are they? Right. Which it seems superficial. I mean, it seems like a trivial comment at first. But he essentially, what the comment is, the universe is really big and it's been here a really, really long time, like inconceivably long. And so if it's possible for a technological society to survive the era that we're in and become spacefaring or become, you know, a Kardashev, you know, a higher Kardashev level civilization, then you should be able to see them from a long ways away, right? We should hear their radio transmissions or something like that. But we look at this vast universe and there's nothing but silence, right? So since he made that observation, a lot of people, there are a bunch of books that you can find on the Fermi paradox and websites on it. I think Wait Not Why actually did a long article series on the Fermi paradox or something, but it's this, I guess, if you will, philosophical dilemma, right? Because if you just look at it at if you take it at face value, you look at the universe and you look at how big it is, and the fact that it's empty suggests that technological civilizations don't survive, right? That they don't survive much beyond the stage that we're at right now. And that says kind of scary things about the world. It says really profound things about it. Anyway, so there's been all of this analysis about, like, well, you know, where could we be in this cycle? Have we already passed the thing that killed all the other civilizations off, right? So you have these various kinds of filters that you have to, hurdles that you have to get past to continue to progress, right? I mean, life has to form, and, you know, maybe, then you have to get to intelligent life, and then you need social life, and then you need technological and all that kind of stuff. And but what's the one that stops everybody? Why is the universe empty? Like, is there a rule, a thing which is so hard to get past that nobody gets past it, nobody's ever gone past it, or getting past it is so rare that even though we can look out at the universe and we can see all of this empty space, that we see nobody who survived this thing. And that's the great filter, right? And so Elon's comment is alluding to this. He's, and it's not difficult to look at where we are right now and look at the next, couple hundred years and say, there's so many candidates for the great filter saying ahead of us. I mean, climate change is a pretty good example of that. Like, maybe it's inevitable that if you get to a certain level of technology in a certain population, that you destroy the environment that you inhabit before you get the technology that lets you transcend that environment and get past it. Like, maybe just every civilization does that. And that, so that's a candidate. There are other things too, like ennui, right? It's like, we're animals. We have an id. We have things that we want. We're learning machines. We learn, right? But we also have a reward function. Like, we have a thing we want, and that's why we learn. I mean, we try to get closer to whatever this thing is that we desire. Well, once you have a certain level of technical capability, maybe everybody just has what they want, and things stop moving forward, and then you just die out, right? Yeah. Like, that's another candidate for it. How far away are we from being able to do that? I don't know, probably a couple hundred years, right? From being able to do that kind of stuff. And so maybe that's our great filter, right? That we get to. And I mean, one way of seeing what SpaceX is doing is like trying to sidestep that, and that what looks like this inevitable end, which is coming for human civilization. I don't know. It's hard. It's hard to look at the universe and be optimistic on the one hand about when you look at this. There are lots of things we don't know, and there are other interpretations. I mean, the Fermi paradox is not a set thing. It's not the be all end all of philosophy on this topic. Sure. But the more time you spend, the more you realize a lot of really smart people spend a lot of time thinking about this, and we don't really have a resolution to it. And it says kind of scary things about the moment in time that we occupy as a civilization right now.
So. All right, James, thanks again for joining.
Super fun. Time. I hope you can edit it down to something.
No.
It won't be acceptable.
Yeah, I don't really, my first priority isn't per se to, like, have a ton of views. Like, my first priority actually is to learn myself, and to actually go through and to get to know you and actually, like, have a conversation that's, of value. So, yeah, I'd love to do it again. If you're open at some point of time.
Sure.
I already have, like,
it was fun.
Yeah, 5 or 10 topics I'd love to chat with you more about. So, all right, I hope that conversation was helpful. If it was, please like the video. It helps get the word out. And also consider subscribing to my channel. We're looking at investment topics, the world, and the future from different angles, trying to get beneath the surface of things. Also, on my channel, most of my videos are streams of consciousness. I'm just kind of sharing my thoughts as I go through a learning process myself. And it's all part of the effort to try to understand the world and what's going on in a more clear and objective manner. So what you hear right now is a snapshot of my current thoughts that will likely change and evolve in the future. If you're on Twitter, I'm active there at HeyDave7. Also, I have an audio podcast of all the videos that are uploaded to my YouTube channel. Just go to Dave Lee on Investing on any of your podcast players. All right, I wish you the best, and we'll see you in my next video. Thanks.